have a quorum. We are ready to proceed.
All right, fantastic. Well, I will go ahead and call the meeting to order. Let's start with a roll call, please.
Hey, Representative Michael Carbone. Okay, Jagadeesan Krishnamurthy.
So Jaggy's here. He has noted in the chat that he's taking a call from India. I don't believe we have an issue with that. So thanks for letting us know, Jaggy.
Okay.
Brian Kirkland.
I'm here. Yeah.
Brian's here.
Here.
Eddie Cook. Nathan Young.
Here.
Christine Ward in for Jennifer Toth.
Here.
Ben Henry. David Byers. J.R. Sloan.
Unmuted and here.
Okay. Lev Gonick. Okay, Jeff Paulson in for Richard Stavnik.
Here.
And Ryan Murray.
Yes, ma'am, I am here.
All right. Welcome, everybody.
All right. Thanks for that. So welcome to this month's edition of our ITAC meeting. I will go ahead and ask the question, staff, do we receive any conflict of interest forms from any of our committee members?
No conflicts received.
Okay. Remind the committee, as we progress through the agenda, if you recognize that there's an item on there that could present a conflict for you, please let me know kind of in line, and we will handle the paperwork as needed. But we just want to make sure that you, I know that you all review that ahead of time, but just in case you recognize along the way that there's a potential conflict, we'll take care of that. With that, I will go ahead and remind the public that this is a public meeting. We do comply with the public meeting rules. There is a link on the agenda that's been posted that will allow you to submit a comment if you have one, and our team will disposition it. With that, we'll go ahead and step into our first item, which is on the committee business, the approval of the March 20th recording as our minutes of our last meeting. There's not any discussion, I'll take a motion.
Mr. Chair, Eddie, I move to approve.
Thank you, Eddie. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you. I think I heard a couple of those. We'll award that to one of you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, thank you for that. Moving on to our next item. I know we've been in touch with our committee members. As part of being a public body, we do need to have everyone make sure that you have completed the Law 2000 training. We are getting reports back and trying to track that along. If you're having any trouble accessing it, please reach out via the email that you've been sent from Asset staff, and we will work to help you through that. but it is important that we have everybody complete that as soon as possible. And there were still a few folks outstanding. We won't go to the naming names time yet, but we'll pull that out if we have to. So again, but if you do have any trouble with that, please let staff know, and we want to make sure that we can facilitate that with you.
Mr. Chair, is Eddie.
Yeah,
there was kind of like a disclosure document. Can we send that to you electronically after we kind of sign it and fill it out? Is that the proper way of doing it?
Yes, you can do that. Yeah, if you have an item that you need to disclose, yes, you can fill that out, send that to the staff And we'll make sure we record that and get that to the right folks. Thank you, Eddie. All right. Anything else on that for anyone? If not, we'll move into our PIDS review and approval section. And our first group up is Arizona Corporation Commission.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona Corporation Commission, who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Corporation Commission is requesting approval to replace their current software platform known as eCorp with a new full cloud model. The new corporation and LLC registration software is a public-facing solution that will make online filing more efficient, user-friendly, and lead to increased online filings. The new software will decrease labor-intensive processing of paper filings and increase internal efficiencies through streamlined processes and more reliable functionality. At this time, I will turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions that you may have.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed Block. I'm the IT Division Director and CIO at the Corporation Commission. I want to introduce some of the other team members. Tanya Gibson.
Hello, everyone.
Christy Thatcher.
Hello.
And Barbara Jo Tronsu.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And with that, I think, Tanya, you're going to take on the next slide, please.
Yes, I will. So the Arizona Corporation Commission registers corporations and limited liability companies, or LLCs, both foreign and domestic, using a customizable commercial off-the-shelf solution that allows the public to file documents required to start, maintain, or close either a corp or an LLC. The current system was launched in May of 2018, and it is at end of life, needing replacement. A replacement solution is necessary to continue to provide required services to the public using advanced technologies that will enhance the customer experience, as well as streamline processes both internally and externally. Next slide, please. The proposed solution will replace the current platform, which we call eCorp. The new solution will offer a high degree of office configurability, meaning the ACC will be able to configure things that it needs, in addition to many security advances that will enhance our ability to detect and prevent fraudulent filings, business identity theft, and cybersecurity intrusions. And I'll turn it over to Barbara Jo.
Thank you, Tanya. As mentioned, the current eCorp system has reached end of life. It was developed in an MVC5 framework, which is no longer supported by Microsoft as of January 2023. A replacement solution is necessary to continue to provide required services to the public. The vendor chosen through the RFP process was ASRAMP authorized on 4/8/2024 by the Arizona Department of Homeland Security. The new platform will be hosted in Azure GovCloud in a full cloud model and will offer us enhanced security and improved performance. The new system will continue to support all existing external interfaces, which includes our partnership with the Business One Stop program. Next slide, please.
Thank you. So the ACC worked in conjunction with the State Procurement Office, or SPO, to issue a request for information in 2022. Based on the information obtained from the RFI, the ACC submitted a budget request for $7 million. The ACC continued to work with SPO to release a request for proposal in July of 2023. SPO received responses from 8 suppliers. An evaluation committee was formed, including ACC subject matter experts, ACC IT, and an ADOA liaison. With oversight from SPO, the top three suppliers demonstrated their solutions to the evaluation team, and those presentations were scored. In February 2024, the contract was awarded to WSD Digital LLC Reframe Solutions as the highest scoring vendor overall. Turning it back over to Barbara Jo.
Thank you. Next slide, please. As you see here, the ACC will share responsibilities with the vendor on project management, testing, data mapping, training, and transfer of knowledge. The vendor will be responsible for functional specifications, data migration, hosting configurations, and development. Next slide, please. On this slide, we see support from our business unit, the corporations division, the IT division, and the vendor's project management team. We will all be working together towards the success of this project. Next slide, please. This is a preliminary timeline, which will be updated after approval is received to begin the project, and the ACC and the vendor has a signed and approved statement of work and timeline. The project will begin immediately upon approval, with go live being scheduled for August 2025 and the warranty period ending in November of 2025. System development and data conversion will be worked in parallel in 12 3-week sprint cycles from August 2024 through May of 2025. This timeline includes user acceptance testing in every sprint cycle and will include communication and testing with all external agencies, including Business One Stop. The ACC will closely monitor the timeline and report any risks in our monthly PIDGE status reports to ASSET. Next slide, please. Here we have outlined the cost of development and operations. Once development is complete in fiscal year 2026, we will move into maintenance and operations, where the vendor will continue to support updates, bug issues, legislature changes, and small enhancements as part of their maintenance contract through fiscal year 2030. Now I will turn it over to our CFO, Christy Thatcher.
Hello, everybody. This is my favorite part. I don't know about you guys. Funding-wise, we will be crossing several fiscal years during the development stage. Hosting and licensing fees are going to be paid annually at the beginning of the fiscal year. Because we're starting at the tail end of FY24, we have negotiated with the vendor to carry the other portion of that pie to FY30 to round it out to a full 5 years of coverage. Because development carries into the first half of fiscal year 26 and hosting and licensing fees are due at the beginning of the fiscal year, we have coded those fees in the FY26 column to development. Operational costs will start in fiscal year 27 and will end in fiscal year 30. Next slide, please. This project will be funded 100% by the Automation Projects Fund, also known as APF. This money originated from our agency's cash balance, not the general fund. $7 million was awarded to us in the FY24 budget bill for this project and will expire at the end of fiscal year 2025. I have been in contact with our JLBC analyst every step of the way during the RFP process, and they know that a one-year extension will be needed of the appropriation to conduct the rest of development. And they are fully expecting this to be included in our FY26 budget submission this fall. Total project development costs are projected to be about $4.54 million. We recognize that this purchase will increase our three-year average of operational costs. However, as we've mentioned in previous slides, the benefits outweigh the cost. Our current appropriation can absorb the $110,000 annual increase operationally. And I will go ahead and turn that back over to the next person and next slide.
I can weigh in here. I want to talk a little bit about the change management success criteria, and it's really bound around these initial milestones of the project. Pretty high level, but important areas to hit as we go through the project. We've got the project kickoff and planning that we need to do as soon as we get approval to start the project. We've got a user acceptance of the development plan that will detail out in lower level detail the sprints and activities in the sprints. The user acceptance of the data conversion and migration activity, which is a key element and is why it's the 12 sprints as described earlier. We've got a final set of test plans and test cases that need to be vetted and created so that we have a full end-to-end test of a critical system. We've got concurrent user training toward the end of the system, and then obviously our go live data point. I'm gonna hand it back to Tanya so she can talk about the business measures of success of this project.
Yes. So what we're looking forward to is the fact that this new solution will be updated, stable, and technologically advanced, which will enhance the customer experience and decrease costs. Success of the system will be measured by an increase in online filings, which we call our online adoption rate, and the reduction in paper filings. The increased filing efficiencies and greater security will encourage online filing by the public. The ACC expects that the online adoption rate will increase to 90% within 1 year of implementation. The increased online adoption rate will result in fewer rejected filings. One of our largest email and call drivers is questions regarding rejected filings. The increased online adoption rate will also decrease the number of rejected filings, which will reduce ACC staff scanning hours by 200 per year and save the ACC $7,000 per year in paper purchases. Next slide, please.
All right, tell you what, before we head into the Q&A session, we're noticing a technical issue on the live stream, so the team is going to stop and restart the presentation. So that's what you're going to see happening momentarily. And as it comes back up, I'll open it up to the committee members for any questions. I've got one I can start with. and then I'll get to Jeffrey and Eddie. So my first question, this is probably more for you, Ed, and Barbara Jo, is it's not clear to me from the content of the presentation whether this is truly a SaaS offering, which would be, you know, multiple tenants in the similar same environment, configurable, or is this more of a managed solution? Is there a single instance being deployed for the needs of the Corporation Commission? And then if it's the latter, then my next question is going to be the vendor's approach on how it handles updates, upgrades, that type of thing.
Okay. Step in if you'd like, Barbara Jo, but our understanding is this is a multi-tenant solution. So that normal deployment of fixes and patches happens as most multi-tenant implementations happen with pre-notice and so forth. The vendor is also agile based, so we expect it to be iterative and relatively smooth.
Excellent. Okay, great. So let's see, I think Jeffrey, you had your hand up first.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. Just a quick sort of technical question. I know the available budget in the APF that came from ACC funds was $7 million, and this total between development and operation is a little under 6 million, about 5.8 million. And I know the standard sort of asset ITAC provision says anything above 10% requires sort of a submission to ITAC for review. As part of this review, are we reviewing the full 7 million and they can go up to that, or are we reviewing the 5.8 million and then any 10% above 5.8, they'd have to come back? I just wanted to clarify that from my understanding.
Yeah, I'll venture an answer, which is that we're reviewing the requested project amount, which is the 5.8. And that is currently defined as the project. And my understanding includes some existing amount of contingency I saw in the financials. So if there's a 10% variance from that, then it should come back.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, just to interject real quick, staff, can we go back to the financial slide, please? I want to make sure everybody stays on the same page. We don't create any misconception. And Christy, if you would, make sure that you and I are in alignment when I make my statement. One slide back, please. ITACS asked to review and approve the development costs. We put operational costs and create a five-year picture to understand the life cycle. So what we want to focus on, what ITACS being asked to approve, is that 4.5 and a little bit of change in development, right? That does not mean that we couldn't have discussions with Corporation Commission and JOBC about whether or not those additional funds could be used to help support the needs of the agency as we go forward. But specifically what ITAC is being asked to review is the development costs and then a five-year picture created by the estimated operational costs. Does that answer your question, Mr. Paulson?
Yeah, I guess I'm just, and we haven't seen the official submission for JLBC quite yet. I'm sure they're, you know, the due date isn't for a couple of days, but I'm sure they're waiting for ITAC approval. So I guess just, yeah, it would be, and I can wait to see those documents. What we're reviewing as part of the APF approval, APF review as part of the JLBC requirement. And so, yeah, and I can wait to see what those documents are. I'm assuming they're going to want those operational dollars reviewed as well. And so, yeah, it was clarifying what exactly ITAC's review is. So that's helpful. Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you.
All right, Eddie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not familiar with this particular vendor. And usually when I see them, a small business, I'm always, you know, thinking about the viability and long-term sustainability of the company and their financials. Can you review to me, like, has this company been used before in your organization, or has it been used anywhere else within the state? Again, I'm just trying to figure out, you know, their viability as a business partner for the state long-term.
I don't believe they're in use in the state anywhere. We did leverage SPO pretty heavily to do some of that business continuity background checking of the folks that replied to the RFP. And we've had good conversations with some other customers. I don't recall them off the top of my head, but there were no negative indications that they were not stable.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Tanya.
And I would just like to add to that, even though the company itself is relatively young, the individuals that own the company and that will be working with us in particular have over a decade of experience with state business registries. A lot of them have worked on many other states' business registration systems, and they are currently working with at least six or seven other states on some portion of their business registry. Not a significant draw on their time, but they have a great deal of experience with state government and business registries.
All right. Thanks, Tanya. Mm-hmm. Any other questions from the committee members? Christine.
Hopefully this isn't too silly a question given we're being recorded, but last month we had a DOR presentation, and I see that this system will be interfacing, I believe, somewhat with the DOR system. Are there any concerns? Do we have any conflicts there to be concerned about?
No, I can speak to that. One of the conditions of the contract and the RFP were that the existing APIs be replicated completely so that the five different agencies that the application interfaces with, including Business One Stop, DOR, and others, would really be nothing more than some communication planning and testing rather than any redevelopment activities.
I think it's probably relevant also that in the, you look at the timeline, the new system here for the Corporation Commission would be implemented still 2 to 3 years ahead of, I think the further and some more significant go lives for the Department of Revenue on the STARS project. So the existing APIs that work in their environment should, will continue to service the new system for the Corporation Commission.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, if there are none, we can progress forward.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, ASSA is recommending that this PIDG be approved with the standard conditions as presented.
Okay, these are the standard three that we put up. If there's not any discussion on those, we can move forward to a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Chairman, this is Dave. I move that the project be approved with the standard conditions.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Christine. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, that's a unanimous vote of approval. Congratulations, CorpCon team, and you got your work cut out. Go get it done. Well, I know you got to go to JLBC next, so happy review there, and then you can get your project started.
Thank you, everyone.
Yep. Tanya, do you have something else?
Oh, you know I do. I want to thank everyone. I cannot tell you how happy we are, how excited we are to get started. This is going to be a great project, and I really appreciate all the time and effort you all put into it. So thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Yep. Thanks, Tanya.
Yep.
Bye now. Okay, next item on our agenda is Department of Corrections.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Haley Greenberg. I am an engagement manager with the Arizona Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Corrections, Reentry and Rehabilitation, who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Corrections, in partnership with the Governor's Office, intends to initiate a proof of concept project that will provide a fully automated resource and referral network of services. Currently, the Arizona Department of Corrections manually provides and tracks their post-release resources such as medical, housing, and food assistance, as well as referrals for Arizona returning citizens. This type of manual tracking on post-release care makes it extremely difficult to log and store this kind of tracking information into a singular location. The proposed solution would automate this process and provide the Arizona Department of Corrections with a more up-to-date visibility and reporting functionality into their ongoing care, as well as which services have been utilized by returning citizens in an effort to reduce recidivism. At this time, I will turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Haley. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Nan Nesvig. I'm the Senior Program Manager responsible for the PMO at ADCRR. And today we're here to seek your approval of our PIDG entitled Unite Us Resources Platform. With me today, I have our Deputy Director, Tara Diaz, our Chief of Staff, Anna Black, our Assistant Director of Finance, Richard Evich, as well as our Chief Information Officer in IT, Stephen Baird. Also on our call, we have representation from our vendor, Unite Us. Next slide, please. Let's begin with our business issue. ADCRR currently manages many of our returning citizen processes manually. Provision of our resources or our referrals for those who are returning to our society or are part of our community supervision programs are managed through Excel spreadsheets. It's a cumbersome, lengthy process of manually inputting data initiated several months in advance of an inmate's release by our pool of correction officer threes. Some of these referrals include limited resources for medical care, mental health counseling, financial and food assistance, as well as housing. Our antiquated systems tend to be scattered, and it's difficult to track information or usage of referrals once they've been provided to the returning citizens. As a benefit to the state and our constituents, we're looking to align with Unite Us and their platform. Their platform is a referral network, a service which provides ADCRR with returning citizens opportunities to connect with several different medical, housing, financial, mental health, and social services network resources. Essentially, it's an all-in-one platform, which will not only centralize those referrals, but track the usage by our returning citizens. This usage data will provide a roadmap to our returning citizens' ongoing care through reports and metrics derived from the data in the platform itself. In short, for those returning citizens who take advantage of this network, ADCRR can see how they're doing once they leave our complexes. Next slide, please. An overview of our proposed solution. Well, we are approaching this project as a proof of concept. This approach provides both the governor's office as well as ADCRR with a one-year period to evaluate the platform and determine its viability for long-term financial and contractual commitment. The project has a guaranteed first-year grant funding through the governor's office. As mentioned earlier, the program addresses our current decentralized manual resource referral process at ADCRR. It also provides that visibility into ongoing returning citizen care once they leave our complexes. And it includes a reporting feature that will show a frequency of referral use as well as longevity of that use by our returning citizens. Next slide, please. So how does our proposed solution work? ADCRR pushes an initial data load of returning citizens from that 180-day mark to release to the Unite Us platform. That data will include contact information, names, addresses, telephone numbers, email addresses for those returning citizens. Data from our current community supervision program will also be included in this data push, which is a total of about 9,000 returning citizens at the onset. Every 30 days, we push another stream of data for the next wave of returning citizens and those who are placed in community supervision. ADCRR releases between 900 and 1,200 returning citizens per month. That'll be a staggering 20,000 program participants by the end of the one-year period. Those returning citizens are notified that they've been provided with resources through that information that they've given in that database. And essentially, they can voluntarily contact those resources. We certainly hope that they'll take advantage of that contact, but it's not mandatory for them. And once a returning citizen contacts a resource referral, the data is logged into the system and it's tracked. That platform usage data is then accumulated and transformed into reports by Unite Us. And this feedback is crucial to ADCRR and the state for several different reasons. If we have a returning citizen who is struggling financially, unable to get their medication or counseling services, does not have proper housing, they're more likely to resort to behaviors which will place them back in our system. And our goal here as an agency and as a state is to provide them with opportunities to succeed outside of our complexes and reduce that potential for recidivism. Next slide. The proposed solution due diligence was conducted by the governor's office. Their proposal was received by that office and an agreement was entered into under the authority of our revised statute. The solicitation waiver was issued on 10/20 by ADOA and it authorized the grant agreement. The governor's office spearheaded this effort. As far as our technology goes, this is an all-in-one resource referral platform. It's an easy to use, easy to access web-based program. It can be accessed through a PC, through a mobile device. It'll be utilizing SAML, our security assertion markup language, as well as single sign-on, SSO. and that'll reduce our state's security exposure. It'll improve our user experience and productivity, as well as streamline the authentication process. UniteS has passed through AZ RAMPA protocol. They provided a system security plan that's been approved. Their platform is vendor hosted on AWS. The data will be transferred through SFTP. Next slide. Our project responsibilities kind of speak for themselves. Yeah, each of us, the agency and the vendor combined, have gathered and analyzed requirements. We each have project managers in this race, and we've been working together rather diligently. While we have gone through and identified platform users, they've managed to analyze that data and begin to build that platform. We'll go through the user acceptance testing. They'll conduct the training. Together, we will migrate and transfer that data and transition the users to the social network. As far as the training piece is concerned, they will train. We will train the trainer. Next slide, please. As you can see from our project timeline, it's rather short. We began working with UniteUS in January. NS Partners, ADCRR, and UniteUS had undergone discovery and requirements. At phases of the project, we completed user access pathways. We built the shell of the database together and that reporting functionality. We established some of the data requirements as well as the communication avenues and change management duties. Essentially, if you look at this timeline, all of the Legos are in place right now and we're ready for the big bang. You might ask yourself, why have we moved so quickly in such a short amount of time? And the answer to that question is our grant funding. The grant for this project expires in June of 2025. As a POC, we really needed one full year to successfully evaluate the program and determine its viability. With ITAC's approval today, we'll be able to execute on the deployment in a very short period of time, a matter of weeks. We'll be meeting our aggressive timeline and then allowing for an additional 30 to 60 days to complete the program in 2025, and then spin up the final numbers and determine its success. Next slide, please. As you can see here, based on the POC, our project costs are only for 1 year. Those costs are $1.473 million, and that is, again, a grant funding from the governor's office. Next slide, please. So what does success look like for ADCRR? In a nutshell, it's automation, centralization, and data accumulation specific to these referral resource streams. Within 3 months, we anticipate a 50% increase in our staff's ability to track our returning citizens' activities and provide them with more comprehensive referrals. And why is that important? Well, you know, an engaged returning citizen who's able to maintain their own care is essential to their success, especially when they leave our complex. And our goal is to provide as much assistance as possible to our returning citizens to benefit them. Within 3 months, ADCRR anticipates a 50% increase in our ability to track extended care for our returning citizens. The longer our returning citizens utilize the referral services, the more care they receive, the better their chances of success. If we can track these services, if we can pinpoint any issues or interruptions in those services on a more frequent basis, we can continue to offer them assistance after they've left our complexes. Within 6 months of the project implementation, the agency hopes to increase referral platform usage by 20% over our current count of user services engagements. Earlier, I mentioned that our services that we provide are kind of scattered, kind of hit and miss. No, we hope that everyone would take advantage of this platform, but we'll take that 20% at the onset for this program. And then finally, within 12 months, we anticipate an increase in the referral platform usage by 50%. We'd like to see this spread like wildfire. We'd like to see them continue to use this and find it of value, and hope that with the increased ability to provide our returning citizens with these centralized referral services, that the possible effect on them will be positive and will reduce our recidivism numbers. Next slide, please. Our vendor also has milestone goals for this project. Overall, project onboarding and implementation, serving our returning citizens population through platform integration, a provision of the quarterly reports, which would then denote metrics, KPIs, which in turn will provide ADCRR and the governor's office with, you know, a look into the project and that vital information into the long-term viability of it. One last note before I open this for questions, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the governor's office and OSPB wanted us to relay to all of you that they fully support this POC and ADCRR's effort to provide the best possible resource referral system for our returning citizens. This concludes our presentation, and I'd like to thank you for your time and your attention, and then open it for questions.
All right, thanks, Nan. Okay, committee, what questions do you have? Jeff?
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I just had a couple of initial questions that popped up. So, I may have missed this and I apologize, but what was the source of the federal grant that the governor's office has issued you guys? Is it a specific grant? Is it ARPA monies that are going to be expiring soon? Did they say what the origin of those federal funds were?
Jeff, I'll take that question. Thank you. It's ARPA.
It is ARPA. Okay. Thanks, Richard.
You're welcome.
And then my only other question, Mr. Chair, was, if this pilot is successful and you guys are satisfied with it, is there an understanding of what the ongoing costs would be? Would it be the 1.4 million sort of ongoing, or is there a different sort of cost if we were to implement this sort of in an ongoing fashion? Do you guys have an agreement with the vendor, or would that be a negotiation again?
That would be a negotiation again through the governor's office. But the ongoing cost would be projected at 1.43 million each year,
same amount.
Years
okay.
2 through 5.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Byers.
Nan, as you probably know, a very large number of what you call your returning citizens don't go on community supervision under you folks. They come on to probation, with probation tails. I haven't heard about this project. Have you reached out to our probation staff who are going to wind up with a large percentage of these people coming to them?
I would have to defer to someone else on my team here to respond to that question. I apologize. I do not have the answer to that question.
I'll take that one, man.
Thank you,
Mr. Byers. It's a great question. That is definitely a gap we need to address so far because of the shorter timeline and trying to ramp this up. Most of the conversations have been internal with our community reentry staff, but we definitely can, you know, expand that scope and engage the county side of it.
Yeah, well, if you'll reach out to me, I'll connect you with our director of probation, because we don't
go
into all the details here, but as you guys know, I don't even know, but it's a pretty significant percentage of your prisoners being released go now on probation.
Yes,
and we want to get our probation staff using this. Otherwise, you know, the folks that go on probation aren't going to, you know, be involved with this. And that could be a big gap.
Yep.
The second thing is, we also run the second chance program with you, where a person who has fines and fees, usually, you know, traffic matters, we've been working to get those resolved, reduced, or eliminated so they can come out and have their driver's license. So I don't know if you've connected with our second chance folks, but maybe that's another group that should be tied in as a resource. Because I would think one of your inmates who are coming out would want to be able to get their driver's license, their ID, and so forth. And it would be a resource to plug into our people who then get that taken care of for you in the courts.
Yeah, great point on the Second Chance Center. I do the, so internally at the area that will serve as the, you know, kind of program area responsible for this does include the Second Chance Center grant area. So, and I was also involved in some of the initial kickoff meetings, and there was discussion surrounding the ID credentialing requirements as well.
All right, Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and project team. I just was looking at the project timeline, just seeing that I know you touched a little bit on this, but the majority of these project tasks are essentially done as of 4/15/2024. Can you speak a little bit more into some of the successes you've already had as part of the project tasks? And essentially, it looks like project deployment is already alive and ready to go based on this project timeline.
Yes, Mr. Murray, we have achieved quite a bit in a very short period of time. We have conducted some testing. We have worked with the data transfers. We have looked at pretty much everything. And you are correct. We are ready to deploy at this point in time. We have been able to establish, the user pools, and both internal and external. We've been able to establish the set up that database with Unite Us. They've been just integral in getting this to the point in, like I said, a very short period of time. It's been about 4 months. So yes, we've had some tremendous success in working with this organization. They've been very easy to work with. They put quite a few resources forward for its success. And we feel very comfortable in moving towards deployment, which we anticipate could be within the next 2 weeks.
Thank you, ma'am. And just sort of an additional follow-up to that, has there already been any payment made towards this proof of concept out of that $1.4 million, or is that expected to happen after deployment and go live?
I believe it's expected to occur after deployment and go live.
So I guess maybe I'll ask the harder question. If this is a proof of concept and you've already seen success and we're paying $1.4 million for a proof of concept project, what does that look like to actually continue to transition into go live? Does that make sense?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Sorry, essentially, if we've already proven the concept of this project through the successes you've already had, and we haven't paid any money to do so, why are we paying $1.4 million to do a proof of concept project? Does that make sense?
So the proof of concept itself is going to go on for 1 year, sir. It's going to be once we see the numbers, the metrics, the KPIs, that's when they'll determine whether or not they want to continue on with this project. But to spin this project up was the $1.473 million.
And if it helps, Mr. Murray, the funding schedule, if you will, that goes along with the project is quarterly distributions and has certain deliverables that must be met for the governor's office to release that payment.
That's fantastic. And do we have a listing of what those deliverables are? Are they outlined in the project investment justification or the project plan?
They are. There are milestones and deliverables that are outlined there, sir.
Perfect. Thank you.
Mr. Young.
All right, I had to get off mute here. I'm relatively new to ITAC, so forgive me if I'm not thinking about this correctly, but it looks like you're 2 weeks from deployment of a POC. Has this been presented to ITAC prior to this? I just think the timeline is a little interesting coming to ITAC with 2 weeks before deployment.
It is an aggressive timeline, sir, and we are well aware of that. This was a project that was basically we've gone through all of the steps necessary to get to the test and the test data piece of this, and that's where we're at right now. Everything that's been discovery and conceptual workup for this. We haven't actually released any data into the mainstream. We haven't actually transferred anything. It's all been the workup to get there. And so, given the way that this database works, it's mostly that, like I said, that conceptual building and the requirements and putting everything in place before you execute. And we had such a short time frame. We didn't get this project until early January from the governor's office. And we did the best we could, getting it prepared, getting everything ready, going through the security pieces of this, which took a little bit of time to get them AZ ramp approved and get them through their security plan and everything so that we could get to ITAC. So up until this point, It's been, you know, all hands on deck for the last several months getting this ready, but you are correct. Generally, we would have come to ITAC sooner, but we weren't left with much of a time frame. There's been, you know, no development work done up to this point, just all of that conceptual and requirements of putting it all in place.
So just hypothetically, if ITAC were to decline the project, what would happen to the vendor's efforts thus far? Would they expect payment on what they've been doing so far?
I'm going to defer that question to Adi Evich.
That's definitely a consideration. You know, again, we don't hold the funding. The governor's office does. So depending on what those discussions are and if they decide that there's some payment release that should happen for work that's already been conducted, then that would be a conversation that would happen at that level and a determination made from there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
A question I've got, Nan. The agreement and the payment that will get you a full 12 months of operations from go live. I noticed a lot of the metrics are, I assume, tied to 3 months from go live and then 6 months, 9 months, 12 months from go live. So yeah, that does get you a full 12 months of runtime.
It does, Mr. Chairman. It gives us about 12 months plus a few extra to spin up those numbers and make a decision as to whether or not the governor's office is willing to move forward with this project for future years.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Jeff?
Yep. Sorry, just one more question as I was thinking about it. So my understanding is you would, you know, 180 days before they get released, you're starting to work with them and provide them these resources. Since inmates don't have computers or phones, that would be in a hard copy. After they leave, I don't know what the rate of sort of internet access is for recent releases. And this is, I'm assuming, a web-based portal, but you also mentioned sort of email or mailing these things. So will there be regular communications over the course of the first year with these releases so that if they miss it or if they move or they, for whatever reason, they're not, you know, have access to the online portal to see what these resources are? Like how are you envisioning sort of keeping in touch with these people as they are sort of a more transient population, probably given that they've been out of the population for a while?
It's a great question, Mr. Paulson. And we anticipate some of that to be occurring. But the beauty of this platform is that they have several different ways that they can access the information. Like I said, they can access it through laptop, through a mobile device, you know, email addresses, on and on, text messages if they do have a phone. And so what we hope to do is get that information at the onset, you know, perhaps where they'll be utilizing housing, where they're, maybe they could go to a library to access a PC or that sort of thing, an employer's PC. But the information that they provide to us can be updated in the platform itself. And so we will constantly then be able to see if they've changed residences, if they want to continue on with that referral service. All of that information gets updated. So if they move to a different location or, you know, or they become homeless and they need additional services, then they can go out and they can seek out those services. But it's that data, that tracking of the data that is most beneficial to us because we can kind of keep an eye on how they're continuing their care.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think that speaks to Dave's point about all the probation tales. And I think just probation officers have pretty regular contact with these mm-hmm. people, depending on the level of probation that they've been sentenced to. And so, you know, the probation officer having that usually has that updated contact information, even if the releasee isn't sort of actively updating that, being able to sort of connect those two would be probably a positive.
I agree.
Oh, one more point of clarification, Dan. The success metrics, are those being compared against the outcomes currently through the manual processes?
They are.
Are any of the metrics that you've targeted, do they, any of those have like a zero baseline, like there's no data?
Mr. Chairman, that's a very accurate assessment. We have very little data to go on. And so we are looking at what we can anticipate. And, you know, from our past experiences with some of these types of programs and some of these contacts that we've made from our community supervision programs and such, we are looking at that as kind of our baseline, and those numbers are relatively low. So that's why you're not seeing just very, very high numbers for this program at the onset.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions from the committee? All right, I think we can go ahead and move forward. We'll hand it back to you, Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the following standard conditions as presented.
All right, give you, these again are kind of the standard conditions. If there are no questions or discussion on that, we can move forward. Ryan.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to maybe propose some additional conditions here, given some of the, I guess, oddities with this project, the milestones that were described, maybe having them come back and discuss after project go live, just kind of what that has looked like, whether we're planning on receiving those grant funds and paying those grant funds to where this vendor, just some maybe an earlier check-in than previous, you know, project status.
Committee, or what are your thoughts on this? And Chuck, if you need to go ahead and jump in with something.
Yeah, I just want to make myself available when it comes time to consider it. If there is additional condition, I have a way we can meet that need if the committee wants it.
Mr. Paulson?
I mean, I'm an advisory member, not a voting member, but I can say, you know, budgetarily, if this is successful, which I think we all hope it is, and this, Corrections wants to move forward with this project on an ongoing basis, those are certainly questions we will have from a budget office standpoint on whether to, you know, if this requires an appropriation. So it could be helpful, at least from our office's perspective, to get some IT input on whether this has looking successful, whether that's the 6-month point or right before the end of the POC, just having ITAC's input on whether this has been a successful operation or whether, you know, just to have that input from ITAC would probably be helpful from a budget standpoint. So.
Okay, so I'll come back to the committee members on Mr. Murray's suggestion of potentially additional condition. Mr. Byers?
Nan, maybe just a clarification. You mentioned you were going to send the data on people who were going to get out at 6 months. But if that's the case, you won't have anybody getting out first halfway through the program. So are you, in terms of startup, if there are people coming out next month, are you putting them in and you're going back? So you're not going to wait. You're not going to go and just do six people who are getting out 6 months from now, which would be, you know, halfway through your project. Tell me about that.
Sir, that's exactly correct. We will have anyone from 180 days forward who will be at the onset of the project, plus all of the people who are currently enrolled in our community supervision program. So you're looking at about 9,000 people who will be populating that database at the onset. And then for everyone who's 180 days out, every 30 days, we'll be reaching back to pull those people forward.
Christine?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if Mr. Murray, I don't fully understand what you're proposing. Could you elaborate just a bit for me so I could understand? Because I'm reading this and seeing that they report back on a monthly basis, and so I just don't know what you're proposing and how it relates with that.
Yes, ma'am, Mr. Chairman and Christine, I would suggest that instead of just providing the monthly reports to ADOA ASSET, that they come back and speak to ITAC about the additional details of success of this proof of concept, and understanding the funds that are being provided to it, if they are actually being provided through the grant, and I guess future financial sustainability of that as that project goes live, pending success of it. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the clarification.
I mean, given that we're relatively close to go live, I'm going to suggest that, you know, I don't know if there's meaningful information within 90 days, but we could say maybe quarterly updates. So we get more, you know, get a couple of data points on, you know, post go live, how the project's progressing.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be agreeable to that.
Okay. And do we want in the first update, I guess the report out on the milestone completion? Was that also part of what you wanted, Ryan?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think that would be great.
Okay. Staff, do we have that captured sufficiently?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And just to summarize back so that when a motion comes, right, if the motion is to approve with conditions as presented, adding the condition that the agency will return on a quarterly basis to report on the project's progress throughout the life of the project, and one report out after closure. I think that will cover everything that the committee's talked about, and staff will work with the agency on the particular points of information to cover.
Very good. All right, so committee, with those now revised conditions, do we have a motion?
This is Ryan. I've been vocal on motion with those amended conditions.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Do we have a second?
Ben Henry, second.
Thank you, Mr. Henry. Okay, here we go, folks. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Thanks for helping us get there. Good conversation. Sounds like an exciting project. Good luck, man and team. Look forward to hearing from you coming up in next quarter, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We appreciate your time.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay. Our next item coming up on the agenda is a change request coming to us from the Department of Public Safety.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Michael Carpenter. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Public Safety who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. The Concealed Weapons Permitting Implementation Project was originally approved by ASSET in December of 2022. The aim of this project was to replace the existing legacy system used for issuing concealed weapon permits with a modern web-based solution, allowing electronic submissions and tracking of applications, fees, and system updates. Now, before turning this over to the project team, I would also like to provide the committee with a brief timeline of the project. As mentioned, the project was originally approved to spend $550,000 in automated project funding in December of 22. In June of 23, a change request was submitted to extend the project end date from June to August of 23 due to slight delays in integration with DPS and their message switch. In October, a second change request was submitted and approved to amend the timeline, scope, and budget to accommodate newly identified system enhancements. And then again in January of 24, a third change request was approved to implement multi-factor authentication. During a recent project calibration session with DPS and with the DPS and ASSET teams, it was discovered that the project budget would soon enter the 10% contingency range and therefore would require the project to come before this committee prior to any remaining enhancements being completed. So with that, I'll now turn it over to the project team that is here today in an effort to provide transparency and ensure the committee is aware of the project, its progress, and seek approval to spend the remaining allocated funds.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Sierra Rose. I'm the assigned project manager for this project, and I'm joined today by Michelle Johnson, who is the program management office's manager. I'm here today to seek approval on the concealed weapons change request to implement these additional enhancements. Next slide, please. To expand on Michael's introduction, in October of 2023, DPS implemented a web-based application that allows applicants to apply online for concealed weapons permits. The completion of the initial project took slightly longer than what was estimated in the original PIDG, but the application has exceeded DPS's expectations in the months that it's been used. The number of mailed-in applications has been reduced by 60% in the 7 months since the system was implemented, and that number continues to increase. In addition, DPS's concealed weapons unit is very happy with how easy the application is to use and the support they receive from our vendor, Permitium. Next slide, please. As I stated previously, the concealed weapons team is highly satisfied with the solution and continue to identify enhancements that will improve their business processes and create efficiencies within the software environment. These identified enhancements brought the project costs to the ITAC threshold, so DPS is seeking ITAC approval to continue with these changes. Next slide. The project started in January of 2023 and was fully implemented on October 12th of 2023. Final invoices were paid in mid-December after the previous permitting application was fully decommissioned. Next slide. This is the initial project budget for fiscal year 24, including the ongoing operational costs. Next slide. During the course of the project, DPS submitted several change requests to extend the project end date. The project was initially scheduled to complete in June of 2023, but was delayed until mid-October due to issues in developing key integrations with other DPS systems, and DPS was required to seek an exemption from the state treasurer's office to allow the vendor to collect the permit fees. The current change request will be the last of the project, and all identified enhancements will be completed and invoiced by June 30th of this year. Next slide. DPS's vendor, Permitium, uses an agile methodology for their software development and has been actively working on these post-implementation enhancements since February. DPS has not spent into the 10% ITAC contingency threshold and are seeking ITAC approval today to complete the requested enhancements. As I stated before, all enhancements will be completed and invoiced by June 30th of this year. Next slide. Implementation enhancements are targeting concealed weapons, business process improvements, and ensuring the system continues to remain stable without manual intervention in the event of any disruptions. The automated approval of permits will shorten the timeline for approving the permits and eliminate manual intervention by the concealed weapons team. The full integration with FieldPrint includes adding a validation of applicants' personal information when they schedule their fingerprinting appointment, which will reduce errors in processing their electronic fingerprints. Permitium is also focusing on improving the health of the platform by ensuring that no manual intervention is required by their support team if there is any disruption to the connections to DPS's systems. The daily fee breakdown on the financial reports will assist DPS's finance team with conducting financial audits and reconciling any FBI fees that are collected. Finally, the automated background check for out-of-country applicants will satisfy a requirement that was discovered during a recent FBI audit. Next slide. These are the updated financials that bring us to ITAC today. The costs are for the development and implementation of the enhancements. There will be no changes to the ongoing operational costs. Next slide.
All right, we'll open it up to the committee for questions. Mr. Byers.
I have two questions here. Can you go back to the financial slide? I'm still not quite clear on. You had a project, you had a PID, it was approved, and you've completed that, it sounds like. And now you want to enhance that system. Is that right?
Mr. Byers, that is correct.
So the money we see in fiscal year 24, $999,000, is that for the new enhancements or was that for the total project?
That's the total project.
Yeah, I think it's a little confusing. It seems to me this project was done, and this should be an enhancement. Systems are always enhanced. I don't think this would even fall under ITEC's authority, but you're kind of looking at this as a continuation of the original project rather than the project was completed and operational and then new enhancements. Secondly, you're going to enhance by having an automated system for checking people born outside the United States. What system do you use to do background checks on people outside the United States, can I ask?
It's still run through our message switch. They run a query, a specific query that sends it out through the FBI to all of the outside agencies, and then we get responses back.
So you're sending it to Interpol? I mean, if they're born outside the United States, you're checking sources across the world? Is that what you're doing?
Correct.
Okay.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We understand that there's, we've heard some legislative member concerns that there's a backlog in the permitting process. And I think we've heard that confirmed from the DPS side, but we don't really know how big that backlog is. And with this system, is that going to, with this sort of enhancement to help address that backlog? And do we know sort of how big that backlog is?
I don't have numbers on for the exact backlog. At this point, they've cleared all of the mailed-in applications and the backlog is on the approval piece. So once this automated approval is implemented, that will reduce that backlog as well. But I can get you the numbers on any outstanding backlog.
That would be great. Thanks.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just want to make sure I help everybody understand why this is coming back at this point. This project, right, has concluded in its primary go live and did meet its original intent. However, there's an opportunity for additional development activity and these enhancements and to utilize automation project funds to help accomplish that. The agencies had the opportunity to bring both, you know, more traditional operating dollars into this project as well as a combination of APF. So for the desire of keeping records clean and all this and the opportunities presented between now and when the project was ready to close, we're just combining all of that information, keeping it in one place. And those APF dollars will expire at the end of this year when this enhancement finishes in the next coming weeks, the whole project will be closed out. If the system's enhanced again, it'll be through a new pitch process. So anything additional will come out through a clean new page focused primarily on what just those enhancements are. So hopefully I'm not creating any additional confusion by giving the background because it can get a little complex in a project this long with the different funding sources.
Yeah, and I think the other comment I think Michael made at the beginning, Chuck, that I'll reiterate is that, you know, like 999 is like, it's within, we have a 10% threshold. Because if the project, you know, could overrun 10%, it'd have to come back. Well, we don't want to be bringing something back that has not had approval when someone's already overrun the $1 million mark. So that's not a good, I don't think that's a good feel for ITAC to be approving, you know, a project after the fact in that case, due to the, I'll say, maybe the unusual case that a project is completed for less than the funds that were originally allocated, and it created the opportunity for enhancements post go live. That somewhat plays into our circumstance here. Hope that helps folks understand the case. If any further questions or comments? If not, we'll move forward. Back to you, Haley. I'm sorry. If
I wasn't not Haley, but that's okay.
That's okay, Michael. I'm sorry. Michael,
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Asset is recommending the change request be approved with the conditions as presented.
All right. So again, these are the kind of the standard ones. Any questions or comments on the conditions? And if there aren't any, we can move forward to a motion.
This is Brian. I'll move to approve with these conditions.
Thank you, Brian. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, that's unanimous. Oh. Sorry, I got some feedback there. All right, that's unanimous vote. And that concludes the voting items for today. And we have one informational update.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Justin Modulin. I am an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members from the Arizona Department of Administration who will introduce themselves and provide you with an informational update on the overall status of the HRIS modernization project aimed towards improving the tools available to the human resource staff and Arizona State employees. The HRIS project team has also been working diligently with project vendors to arrive at a juncture for a forthcoming change request. This informational update will include progress towards that change request objective as well. Alba and Sean, you have the floor.
Thanks, Justin. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sean Price. I am the Deputy Director with the Arizona Department of Administration and the AZ360 HRIS Program Director. And I believe I have Alba with me. Alba?
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Alba Valencia, and I am the AZ360 HRIS Deputy Program Director.
All right, next slide. I apologize, I'm working from home today, and the F-35s fly over every once in a while, so they're a little noisy. All right, so just an update on the overview of the project. I'm not sure if we have any new members, but we are about a little over a year, to year and a half into the replacement of our 20 plus year old legacy HRIS solution, which is currently through our vendor Lawson. And we are developing a new solution, AZ360 Advantage, which is on the same platform with CGI with our APHIS, which is our financial solution. So both solutions will be on the same platform. And so we are, like I said, a little over a year and a half into the implementation of this new solution. The solution itself, we have been running in the red status since about July of last year, and we've been working diligently to get back in the green status, and with all of our countermeasures that we've put in place roughly over the last 6 to 9 months, we did not have the ability to meet the September of 2024 go live date And so we've been working with CGI to come up with a new go live date for the project. And we will be presenting that change request to ITAC in May. We did submit everything for that change request to go through the process. So let's see. I guess we can move to the next slide. That's high level. So like I said, we've been working diligently through a change request, and which is very difficult with the size of this project. You know, we are replacing the, you know, the position control and personnel system, where it's all new payroll solution, benefits, time and leave, right? So this is the bread and butter of our HRIS. And so that's what we have been working through. There's a lot of complexity around that. So we did a problem solving event, a Kaizen, and went through the process over essentially the last couple of months of getting to a new go live date. So there's a lot of things that we looked at. But as we were looking at, you know, the struggles to get to a new go live date, we, you know, we're looking at the risks and the variations within the project. Unfortunately, probably like a lot of state agencies, we have a lot of single points of failure at ADOA. And a lot of those people are on the project. It's a lot of our long-term staff that have run these areas within DOA for many years are working through the project. And, you know, there's a lot of risk within those people, right? So everybody has vacation and people burn out and, you know, we'd lose people on the project, which has happened over the last year and a half. So we have that variation that's out there and the risk around it. The other things we were looking at around the challenges to get to new go live date is as we are working through the data, which we've talked a lot about over the last year with ITAC, is doing these data conversions from the old data in the old solution and moving that over to the new solution has been very complex. So there's still a lot of risks with moving that data. We've been doing, the trajectory's been a lot better. We've been solving our problems a lot faster with the data moves, but there's still a risk out there. We have kind of within that risk is the what we call our EI generator. There's a pretty significant challenge, and I'm not sure if we've gone much into detail with ITAC on this challenge, but we have all of the state employees within this solution, but then we have all the universities and in the solution too. And the piece that's complex is the universities, right? The universities are under the state's benefit program. And so when we went to do this merge of all of the data in the current solution into the new solution, how that's structured in the old solution is completely different than the new solution. So we had to come up with a way to be able to identify everybody into the new solution. And some of our university employees could potentially have up to 5 or 6 different, what we would say, EIN numbers, because we actually have some people that work for the state. They've worked then for DPS, then they've worked for ASU, U of A, NAU. It's insane, but we actually have people that have done all of that in their 30 or 40 year career. And how all those different systems are structured, they have identified numbers for those individuals that are all different. So how do you take all that and consolidate it down to one number? And so we can identify that person and tie it back to all their records. Lots of complexity there, way beyond what I even have the ability to understand. I have people on our team that are super smart that understand all that, and they've built this EIN generator. But with that complexity, there's challenges, you know, and just unknowns. And then I kind of jumped into the universities a little bit and our vendors and our customers, right? So we're building a lot of reports. We're building a lot of interfaces. We're building interfaces with health insurance companies, with the universities, with ASRS, PSPRS, with all the agencies. So there's just a lot that goes on with all that. Obviously, we have a lot more control with the agencies, but we have a lot less control when it comes to the universities and our vendors. And so we are working, and everything is going well with all these partners, especially universities. It's going great. but there's unknowns, right? And then the last piece is we really haven't got into the in-depth testing of the solution yet. So we've done unit testing and we've done integrated system testing, but we haven't got into the user acceptance testing piece, right? So that's when we do that as a department, but all of our agency customers come in and test all those processes, right? So there's always a potential there for a risk. You know, we get DES or ADOT comes in and they test the process and they say to us, nope, that's just not going to work for our business, but we're going to have to work through that, right? And so there's potentially delays there. So this is just giving you a sense of all the things that we were digging into and looking at. Next slide, please. So with our supporting documents, is what was everything we were looking at to come up with a new date? So we have a fair number of different plans that we're working through and developing, which I know we've talked a little bit about in the past. But I think the key one in here, a key couple plans are our consolidate sprint plan. This is the plan that we follow for the project. Since about October timeframe, which we presented in ITAC, is we have gotten to the point in that plan that we have assigned a level of effort to all the work that needs to be done in the project going forward, which has been extremely helpful for us as we've worked on a new go live date. We've taken all of that information and we've actually built out a complete plan on the state side of everything we need to do for the project. It's about a 7,500 line plan. And every single action in that plan is tied to a person, a date, and a level of effort. And we've actually taken that plan and we've generated a report out of that plan we call our resource report. And that's where on the data one, we've taken that resource report and we've looked at that resource report and it tells us every employee we have on the project and how much work that they have per month broken down essentially per sprint. And we have taken that, we analyze that, and then we've come up, based on that, we've come up with a new go live date. So many different things we were looking at along the path. And of course we looked at, you know, recommendations from IVNV, and we've looked at another number of other plans that we have out there to help guide us in this decision that we have gotten to and submitted to ITAC for a change request. Next slide, please. Oh, you thought we were going to give you the date. Well, I don't know who has access to the documents we submitted. JR, Chair, is it okay to let everybody know the new go live date, or should we wait on something like that? That we're going to propose, or does it matter?
Yeah, at this point, I don't know that it matters. You know, I just bring it forward with the change request.
Okay, so we'll
keep people's interest.
So with all that problem solving and all the data, it did take us a couple of months. We did meet with, literally we met with every single leader on the project to get their feedback and their buy-in on the go live date. It was important to us that every leader of every area in the project understood what was left to complete, how much work it was going to take to complete it, and when could we get it done by. So we went through a couple of iterations, essentially like a catch ball, where we went back and forth with these leaders and we came to an agreement of what it was going to take to get done. So lots and lots of thought was put into it, looking at a lot of data. So so that is what we will do. We will present in the May ITAC. Next slide. So this was our extension change request timeline, and we continue to use this and work through this. I believe the majority of this has been completed. Some of the things that are outstanding still is we are in final, we are in agreement with CGI on the go live date. We are just buttoning up the dollar that is that the cost to the extension that we would essentially pay for CGI's part of the extension. So we're down to really, I think about 5 o'clock today, I'm going to have an answer from CGI, but we're right down to where we need to be on from that standpoint. And then we will work through the contract to get the amendment ready. So once ITAC does approve the change of date in the budget, we'll be able to sign that agreement with CGI, and then we can continue to move forward with implementation of the project. So just once again, I mean, it's probably been, it's April now. We've been in pretty hard negotiations with CGI for almost 3 months on this. So it's like anything, it's sometimes it hasn't been comfortable, and which I think is a good thing. So that means that, you know, that I want to make sure that we're getting what we need from the state, from CGI, and it's reasonable with the push. And obviously we'll talk more about that in May and the change, but we've been working hard to do our due diligence to ensure that taxpayers are getting what is expected from us on this push of this project. So any questions on this slide?
Go ahead, Dave.
Sean, as I recall this project, there's only certain times of the year you can implement it, even if you're ready, say, earlier. Is that still the case?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay.
And they put in, we did take into account, and the go live date is prior to the end of that fiscal year. So, and so we won't have impact into year end, and we won't have impact going into other pieces into the fall with like open enrollment, things of that nature. So it's a spring go live in 2025, which we'll bring forth. Next slide. So we're bringing forth some new metrics into ITAC to show the month over our sprint over sprint progress with the project. And so we are currently in the middle of the second week of sprint 16, and we have 4 week sprints. So this is a look back of sprint 15, which concluded a week and a half ago, and then sprint 14, which was 4 weeks prior to that. And so this metric is broken down into the three key areas of the project. We have the functional team, which is all the main work of configuration and development on the project. That's the top line. If you look under sprint 15, that's going to be the one that's at the top where it's 100%, 87%, and 20%. The second line down, 177.42, that's the technical team. So that's all the interface work, the reports, our data conversion. And then the last line at the bottom is our OCM team, which is our change management and training, which is the 100, and then the negative 13. So the key to these metrics is one to show the month, the sprint over the sprint, but let me explain just really quick high level what those percentages are. So at the very top of sprint 15 there, you have 100%. That's just telling you that when we took this measure of percentages of completion, that was at the end of the sprint. So all the time had elapsed within the sprint. The next number is 87% for functional. So the functional team completed 87% of all the work that was assigned to them for the 4 week sprint. And then the next number is 20% scope change. What that is telling us is that we actually increased work within the sprint. And so we increased it by 20%. So we pulled in additional work into the sprint that wasn't originally accounted for when we started the sprint. So that's how we read each one of the lines going down. So you'll see that functional completed 87%, technical completed 77%, and the OCM team completed 100% of their work. And so if you look to the previous sprint in comparison, functional completed 55% of the work that was brought in, technical was 80% and the OCM team was 94%. So sprint over sprint, a pretty significant increase. I will tell you that sprint 15 was the best sprint for deliverable on the project in the entire project to this point. So what happened? What was different? So at the beginning, or actually the week before the start of sprint 15, we implemented some pretty significant changes to how the PMO was managing the project. And I know we talked a little bit about those in the previous ITAC meetings, but we went from a monthly oversight of all the work down to a weekly oversight of the work. So we are assigning work at the week by week for each sprint. We're no longer assigning everything at the beginning of the sprint and then just telling teams to go get the work done. So that's the first major change. The second major change is we've implemented an accountability structure of meetings to hold our teams accountable each and every day. Every day starts with a scrum meeting in the morning around accountability. And then there's numerous meetings throughout the day around accountability for getting the work done. And so that oversight, the support, the teams are raising blockers or dependencies up faster. There's just a number of things. So it's really cleaning up the process to help what I always say, the widget through the process, and supporting our teams getting the widget done through the process. So it's clear that these changes have had a significant change in the deliverable of work just in one sprint. And we're currently in sprint 16 right now, and we're on a pretty good trajectory right now in sprint 16 also. The amount of work that's getting done is quite significant, as you can see, the same as in sprint 15. So great changes, we look to continue this weekly accountability that will be done through the life of the project, these changes that we have put in place. So, and we'll continue to bring this metric to ITAC, so we'll continue to show sprint over sprint and how we're doing on the progress to get this project to done. Any questions on this slide? All right, next slide, please. All right, Alba's probably gonna help me with this. So this is a brand new burn down chart. So let me talk through it a little bit and make sure everybody understands it and we'll get through it here. So I'm gonna start with just looking at the chart overall. What the very first important thing on this chart is the line you see, which is kind of hard to see, kind of as well as sprint 15. So you see a definitive line that runs up and down through sprint 15 that cuts across all the colors. Everything on the left of that line of sprint 15 is actual numbers. So it's actually what occurred from a burn down and what we accomplished. Everything to the right of that line is forecasted. So we are currently in sprint 16. And so as we continue, we'll put the actuals in of what occurred, and we'll continue to then reforecast based on our trends of accomplishing the user stories. So based on that, the ideal burn is on trajectory to be completed in sprint 27. The date of sprint 27 is roughly March 10th, would be sprint 27. So just some hard numbers behind that ideal burn. We have to date 5,531 stories. We are forecasting an additional 2,460 stories that still need to be done on top of backlog. So that's the total anticipated user stories will be 7,986 for the whole project. So we've built that into the ideal burn. So we want to get done by sprint 27, which is March 11th. But March 11th is not the new go live date. And we'll talk more probably about that in the change request in May, so we can explain why that is. So looking at some other numbers, the forecasted trend, which is that top dotted line, which is kind of like a brown color, if we stayed on path with the level of burn of our user stories each sprint, it would have put us out to sprint 34, which would be roughly October of 2025, which is obviously way beyond the new go live date. So that just would show if we didn't make any change, we just kept doing what we were doing at the before we started sprint 15. And I mentioned some of the major changes we implemented in sprint 15. So now looking at the forecasted burn, which is the fuchsia color. So with the changes that we've made and the progress that we've seen in sprint 14 and 15, we continue to see in 16, we are on trajectory to meet the ideal burn in sprint 27, which is, tell me if I'm wrong on this one, Alba, but I believe is a roughly a 373 user story burn per sprint. And that's so just kind of, okay. And just to give you an idea, I think we burned over 400 in 15. So we actually beat that projection to meet sprint 27. Now the dotted one that's below the fuchsia one is a high forecasted burn. So if we continue to burn at 400, we will actually get done in sprint 26. So if we meet what we did last sprint in sprint 15, we would actually get done a sprint earlier than on this. So that would be our high burn. So we will bring this burn down chart to ITAC every month going forward. We will update it every month. So then we can look and see, are we on track to meet sprint 27? Are we off track? Are we going to hit it early? Are we over? And if we're over, what are we doing about it? Conversations? So I think hopefully that was clear. Any questions on the burn down? Okay, if there's any follow-up questions after the meeting, obviously we can take questions. So I know that's a lot for the burn down. So, all right. Whew. All right, Mr. Chair.
All right, thanks, Sean. Any questions from the committee on the content here? All right, well, I think we are all greatly anticipating the seeing you guys next month for the change request.
Yes, sir.
All right, and as noted, May 15th is our next meeting. So lock in your calendars and our team will be reaching out to confirm your availability to attend. That concludes our business today, folks. Thank you for your time. We'll give you back about 15 minutes. You can do anything you want with it.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.